disappearing.
Gam tomorrow, gam
hayom. It's 2 days. Okay, Erev Tov. I hope everybody had a wonderful Purim and enjoyed the week off last week. You had a break. As you can hear, I also had a break, but not necessarily voluntarily. I got sick last week, so just coming out of it a bit. We are going to start looking at I'm calling it the last lap. The Sefer really divides itself into different sections, and this last section is really it's where everything gels together, where the handover from from Shaul to David takes place, and also at the same time the development essentially of David's character in terms of kingship, the fact how Shaul, as we said last time, the kinah, the terrible jealousy that he had, really overcomes him, and you'll see that he comes out of it every so often, and he's very sad that he's become that way. It's very interesting. The reality of learning Sefer Shmuel, which I think is so important to remember, is that the characters that we're dealing with are very complex. One of the big issues which Rabbi Schachter, J.J. Schachter, one of the teachers of YU, wrote about a long time ago, 12, 13 years ago, is the issue of how you portray characters in Jewish history. Very often what has happened is that, particularly with the Art Scroll and the way that they've done it, they've made the characters very, for want of a better word, one-dimensional. You know, they knew Shas by the age of 3, and they knew this by the age of 6, and they were already Gedolei Yisrael by the age of Bar Mitzvah. And, you know, you get the impression that maybe things were a bit more complicated. And it's one of the big complaints of how you present people in Jewish history, for sure. The reality is that you've got people who, on the one hand, were very tremendously imbued with Kedushah, but at the same time, they have this element in their character which is difficult to understand. And in the end of the day, that's it. You know, how many of us have been to the rabbi, whoever rabbi it is, and you come away disappointed? You know, you expected the rabbi, whoever you went to see, to be uplifting and to always be on a high and whatever. He's also a human being. He's Eichad HaMensch. And sometimes he doesn't, you know, manage to convey that. And it's nothing new. I'm saying this because we're going to come across a person in the next two prakim who gives us a real, real challenge. If David is not enough, and Yonatan wasn't enough, and Shaul is not enough, then we're going to come across this gentleman called Doeg Edomi. Doeg Edomi is a very, very strange individual. There's no other way to describe him. He's a gentleman that we're told he was the head of the Sanhedrin, which, you know, is a pretty good, is a pretty high level of achievement to become the head of the Bet Din. You know, whichever country you find yourself, to be the head of the Sanhedrin is a pretty high level of certainly of learning and whatever. And yet, at the same time, we're going to see him carry out an act which is going to be so shocking. It's almost that you get to the point where you don't even want to talk about it. And yet, there is, within his character, different elements which we need to understand. The elements of Doeg really are very challenging. And again, I just say this by way of introduction, because when we read this, we're going to be so shocked. And Chazal are also very perplexed, they're very worried, they're very, very disturbed, particularly by Doeg, and they want to understand, what's the key? Where's the essence of Doeg? Where does he go wrong? And it's interesting, and I'm going to tell you this already as a kind of clue, that it revolves around the issues of a subject which is very much part of the Jewish life today that we talk about, we learn about a lot, which is the question of Lashon Hara, not spreading any sort of negative rumors or telltales or whatever it may be about other people. Even the truth, the reality is that even when it's the truth, if it's going to be detrimental, one should keep it to oneself. One should not start, as it were, spreading it around. The Gemara calls it Well, I think the Chofetz Chaim brings as a mashal. I don't remember where he gets the mashal from. He says Lashon Hara is like a feather pillow. He says once you have these pillow fights, right? So once you smash the pillow, the feathers go everywhere. And he says, imagine you're outside, you're doing it in the open air, you're in a windy place, you smash the pillow, the feathers fly everywhere. Try and collect the feathers. Impossible. They've flown off in who knows what direction. It's absolutely impossible to get them back. And he says that's what happens with Lashon Hara, that it sometimes goes to directions or it goes into situations you can never believe how far it travels. And this is the issue which I think we have to come to terms with in the character of Doeg. Doeg, as difficult as he is, as we're going to read in a few minutes, the reality is that he's also very, what I would say, somebody that we can relate to his issues. We can relate to certain elements of his character because it's a challenge that we all have. Lashon Hara is one of those things that is with us the whole time. It's very, very difficult to control. Sometimes we say things when we shouldn't have said them. We regret it afterwards and we realize that what we've said is wrong. It's too late. Sometimes we've done it. The damage is done. And this is going to be the issue which we're going to deal with in chapter 21, page 100. So we'll start looking at the Psukim. Just one further word of introduction before we start is that, Kodesh Baruch Hu is very good, as they say. Hashem is Tov. What I mean by that, because, when you get a Peirush, which we've been following, Rav Bachrach, that we've been following so closely, the problem is, like I spoke of in the Chamaliv, it's the same problem that a lot of the stuff that they said, Torah Shebal Peh, was not written down. Or put this way, it's not yet been written down. Rav Bachrach's staff concentrates essentially up to chapter 20, Perek Chav. Perek Chav Aleph, he's gone. There's nothing in writing which has been preserved. So I was looking around at Israel last year for something really to sort of continue the process. And I came across an author, and I'd be interested to know if any of you know him, somebody called Eliyahu Yadid. Eliyahu Yadid is an interesting guy. I Googled him. As I mentioned a few weeks ago, that's what you do these days, you Google everybody. And he came up he's a teacher in one of the Israeli schools, one of the yeshivot, and he's put out these sfarim, which are really very, very interesting, also dealing with the issues as we have discussed them, and I will share with you, Bezrat Hashem, some of his thoughts, some of his ideas. He's one of the gentlemen on my list of people I want to look up next time I'm in Israel because, if we're learning from his svarim, I want to see what exactly who the guy is. So, if I refer to Rabbi Yadid, you'll know exactly Eliyahu Yadid. And if you can find out anything about him for me, I'd appreciate it. I'm not quite sure what school he's involved with. I don't think it's an American program. I think it's an Israeli program. But we'll come back to him. We'll deal with some of his chidushim in due course. So we're looking at page 100, chapter 21, and we're going to read, if we can get through 21 and 22, but at least get through 21 today at least, one of the very, very difficult stories in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. Chapter 21, Chof Aleph. Vayokom vayelech Yonatan, avyokom vayelech, Yonatan bahayir. So David goes one way, Yonatan goes another way. Okay? Now, Chazal already point out that they left each other in a very, I suppose you would call it, on the one hand, we know that they were very close, and they made this covenant between each other, the last pasuk of the previous chapter, Lech L'Shalom, Shenish Banu Shenenu, they made a promise between each other. But the problem is that David goes off, and Yonatan goes off, and David is now on his own. Now, being on your own is all well and good, but there's one problem that you need to survive. And in order to survive, you've got to have food, you've got to have supplies, David is out in the wilderness here, because he can't go back now to the palace, because Shaul wants to kill him, and he knows that already, and he can't, where's he going to run to? And he realizes that the king is going to be chasing and looking for him, and who knows what. So we've got here a very interesting situation, and Chazal say something very dramatic, even on this pasuk, and they point out that they left each other, and Yonatan did not give him any food. Yonatan did not leave David with some sandwiches. At the end of the day, go to Peter, you get a meat sandwich and give it to him. The answer is no. Yonatan seems to have been concerned going back to the city as soon as possible. David went off in his direction, and as a consequence, the whole story that we're going to read now develops, and Chazal are prepared to blame Yonatan for not being concerned enough to give David some sort of, how should we say, tzeila laderech, right? Giving him something to take with him on the way. It's very interesting. You know, you've got to worry about these things. I once visited a cousin of my wife, in the, my father-in-law's cousin, in fact, in Yerushalayim. And one of the things that I noticed, he was a very Germanic individual, very, what they call in this country, Yeki. But I mean, you know, sort of born and bred in Germany. And one of the things he was very particular about before we left, to make sure that we had something that we could take with us, like a doggy bag. And he wasn't just offering a doggy bag, but he wanted to make sure we had something to eat. And also what they call levaya, levaya, not in the sense of funeral, levaya in the sense of accompanying us. He walked us from his apartment in Bai Vagan. He walked us to the bus stop, made sure that we got on the bus. You know, it was very interesting. And again, all of this is part of a Jewish tradition, that when somebody comes to visit, you make sure when they leave that they don't leave in a way that they will be disadvantaged, if that's the word to use. So this is, again, something I want to point out right at the beginning. David goes his away, Yonatan goes that away, and there doesn't seem to be any sort of parting gift, nothing which gives David any sort of way to survive. He needs food. And look what happens straight away. Pasuk Beis, it's page 100. Vayovo David Nova. So he comes to a place called Nov, El Achimelech HaKohen, to Achimelech the Kohen. And this is the town of Kohanim. And there must have been many towns of Kohanim around the country. We know that they existed. And the Kohanim obviously lived in those towns, and they kept standards of Tahara. They kept standards of purity, which involved clearly sort of, you know, being prepared to go to the Mishkan. In this case, we're talking about Nov, which was where the Mishkan was at the time, as you'll see, because we're going to talk about the Lechem HaPanim, if I'm not mistaken. And we're going to see something very interesting. Achimelech knows who David is, straight away. He's the Edom, he's the son-in-law of the king. Look what it says there. Ve'yecharan Achimelech likrat David. Achimelech starts shaking, he's fearful. He's trembling towards David. Ve'yomelo, what are you doing here alone? Doesn't understand it. Ish ain't tongue. Nobody's with you. You know, David, you know, if you're coming to, as it were, the shliach of the melech, you're going to be the messenger of the king, you have an entourage, you have men with you. Why are you by yourself? What's going on here? He couldn't understand Achimelech, who was the high priest at the time. So, vayomer David Achimelech ha-kohen, ha-melech tivani davar. David replies. He says, the king commanded me. Now, David is going to use a subterfuge. We've seen this before. We've mentioned it a number of times, that it's not the truth. But in this case, to be diplomatic. So he says, the king commanded me, davar, on a matter. Vayomer Eli, the king said to me, ish al yedam u'ma, don't tell anybody. Nobody should know what it is. Secret mission. Okay, that's what David says to him. Et davar shanochi shalecha, on what you're being sent, I'm sending you. Vashet zivitich, what I'm commanding you. Vet anarim yodati amakom ploni almoni, and the lads that are meant to be with me, they're in a certain place, ploni almoni, don't even know where it is, anonymous place, and they're waiting for me. So he makes up a whole story, a ruse, which again is back to something that, as I said, we spoke about. We saw it with Shmuel doing such a thing. We saw it recently, also David did it in the previous chapters that we saw recently. It's one of those things that they did in order to, as it were, get out of a difficult situation, you know, as you say, being economical with the truth, if that's the way to describe it. And he goes on. Now, ma yesh tachad yadacha chamisha lechem. He says that, do you have 5 loaves of bread? He's looking for food. He's looking for something to survive. And he's asking him, do you have 5 loaves? And the Mefarshim want to know, how does he know about 5? And there seems to be that this was known, that this was the portion of Achimelech. What happened was that the Kohanim had Mishmarot. They were divided into watches, into groups. And when they would come, they would get the all the various matanot, the various gifts that were given. They were divided all up. And it seems that Achimelech was due for himself to get 5 loaves of bread. Okay, and of course, he was looking for regular bread. Didn't want to take the bread, the lechem apanim. There was the famous bread which was on the table on the shulchan of the Mishkan. We just learned about it in the last few sidrot. And that was a special thing. That was put on from, excuse me, it says from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. Friday to Friday. It was put on a Friday, taken off the next Friday, and it was still steaming hot. It was still fresh, as if it had just been baked. And it was stayed like that the whole week. Which is kind of an interesting thing, one of the nisim of the Mishkan, and eventually of the Beit HaMikdash. So David is not looking for that, because that requires a standard of Kedusha. So he's looking for regular bread. You know, do you have regular bread? If you know, what do you have? So he says, Tanabi Adi wa Nimsad, you know, if you can give it to me, or whatever you can find. So Vayana Kohen David, Vayom Eilechem Chol El Tachel Yadi. Kiyim Lechem HaKodesh Yesh. He says, you know what, I haven't got any regular bread. And again, the Mefarshim are perplexed. Why haven't you got a loaf of bread in the whole city? And it seems to be, for whatever reason, there were issues of Tarat HaKodesh, it's called. And for some reason, at this point in time, the only bread they had was the Lechem Kodesh, was the actual holy bread, what was called the show bread, the Lechem HaPanim. Im Nishmur Narim Ach Misha, but in order to eat that, you've got to be on a high standard of Tara, and they have to be, as it were, separated from their wives, these men that you're taking the food to, and that was his demand. If you're going to take this, then you have to make sure the people who eat it have got to be extra holy. Let's go to the mikveh and all the rest of it. And it's very interesting, this whole discussion over here. He's prepared to give him the bread. I have no issues with that. But at the same time, you know, he makes the various stipulations. And again, we see the halakha in practice. There's not many places, and I just throw this in as a kind of side comment, but there's not many places where you see in Tanakh a sort of direct reference to standards of halachic practice in the way that it's referred to here. You know, even chagim are mentioned so rarely. It's one of the shiurim that I've given on Pesach a number of times, is the reference to the Chag HaPesach in Tanakh. And it's only referred to like 5 or 6 times in Tanakh. And it's only referred to as specific instances in Jewish history. So it's kind of interesting. And there's a very difficult pasuk in Sefer Ezra, which seems to suggest that Chag HaSukkot was not celebrated from the days of Yeshua right through the period of the First Temple, which is an unbelievable pasuk. And again, that's a whole shiur by itself. So there's a lot of question marks about the observances, the sort of the day-to-day stuff that they did do. We saw the Rosh Chodesh was a big thing. We saw that in the last chapter. And now we're seeing about the whole question of Tara, the whole question of physical purity, spiritual purity, which was needed when you were around the Kohanim, when you were in that particular environment. All right. So, again, I just want to point this out because it's kind of interesting. So, Pasuk Vav, Vayad David et HaKohen, Vayomelo. So, David replied, Iki im isha tzura lanu kitmol shilshom. We've been away from our wives for a couple of days. But Seti, when I left, you klei anarim kodesh, and even the clothing that they're wearing is holy, suggesting whatever ritually clean they've cleaned their clothing, probably they've dipped in the mikvah, whatever. For who derech chol? And what he's saying that if you look at the Rashi, what this means, for who derech chol? Once the bread comes off the table, the show bread that you're giving me, it becomes chol, it becomes less holy than it was when it was on the table. So what he's telling him is that the bread will in fact be suitable for us at this point. And even if today it will become holy in a vessel, it doesn't matter, because again, Rashi points out, as he says here, Haita Tchila Kedusha Torah Shulchan. Even if it started its holiness today, Hayiti Zakuk Litlom Misham LaAchilenu. You still got to feed me. Sheachazo Bulmas. Now, basically, what David is saying is that he's desperate to eat something. David is in a situation. The word Bulmas means that you're kind of in a state of desperate hunger. It induces a certain amount of lack of control, lack of clarity in your mind. And in such a situation, David was arguing that whichever way you look at it, the food, you know, I need the bread. If you're going to give me the super holy bread, then I need that one as well. And I can justify why I can eat it, even if you're going to tell me that it's very holy. The reality is that I'm in a situation where I haven't eaten, I'm really desperate to eat, and I've got to eat something. So the Kohen, you know, what's the Kohen going to do? He's not going to refuse it. David argues halachically with the Kohen, and we're going to see this side of David HaMelech. Every so often there is these glimpses of David's halachic knowledge. It really is quite staggering. The best story is going to come up in chapter 25, which I still want to do before we get to the summer. The story of Abigail, I hope we'll get to that pretty soon. There's a halachic discussion there which is breathtaking. And, you know, David knew his stuff. So again,
Achimelech
seems to be the Kohen Gadol in this case, yeah. Yeah. can't take all. I've got to leave you one loaf of bread. Yeah, I've got to leave you something.
Right.
Something for our motzi.
I was going to take all six, but I'll take five. It's interesting.
That's what it seems to say. But it's just interesting how he argues I'm allowed to do it, whichever way you look at it. Halachically, kuch nefesh. In the end, he argues, you know, I'm desperate for a bit of bread. All right. Yes. Yeah.
So if it's kadosh, then zar cannot eat it.
Correct. Yeah.
If it's whole, right, then there is no issue of seeing isha and.
Yeah. He's arguing. He's saying whichever way you want to look at it. If it's not kadosh or it's at a lower standard, there still are standards that the kohenim apply even to regular food, right? So therefore, he wants to say that we're on that standard for regular food, chol. And if you want to tell me it's really kodesh, then I'm going to say to you, there's a reason because of my situation. Bulmus. He says he's going a bit crazy because he's desperate for something to eat and he hasn't got any food. So whichever way you look at it, as they say in the Gemara, whichever way you look, you'll find there's a reason for him to be allowed to take this bread. For himself, for sure. And he's arguing that, you know, for the people he's taking it to, they will also be allowed to do it. He's basically trying to cover all the bases. For more detail, you have to look at the Rashi, because Rashi gives you all the nuances of the halakha, which I don't want to go into, but it's very interesting. Okay, there's a lot of nuances in the halakha about how you can use this bread in this particular situation, and David argues to the Kohen, to the point where the Kohen says, fine. What is interesting, which is not discussed at the moment, is that the Kohen could have asked the Urim V'Tumim, he could have asked Hashem, what's going on here? And the Kohen does it, he takes David at his word. Later on, you'll see that becomes an interesting factor, the whole question of the use of Urim V'Tumim. But before you get to that point, David is arguing from all Mikolat Stadim, I'm allowed to do what I'm doing, please give me the bread. And of course, what happens immediately? Pasuk Zayin, Vayitin lo Kohen Kodesh. The Kohen gives him the holy bread. There's no problem. Ki lo ayasham lechem ki im lechem apanim. Hamusar lifnei Hashem. The only bread they had was the special bread, the show bread, as is known as in English, which is taken away before Hashem. Lasum lechem chom biyom hilokho. They take it off and they put a warm bread on there, and it stays warm literally the whole week. And then on Friday, it's taken off again, and it's given the kohenim usually take it. And I guess they use it for Friday night, you know, Zaydis Chalas and all the rest of it. There's a wonderful thing, you ever go to Chassidish Atish, they have this, some Chassidim, I've seen it, that they have 12 Chalot on the table. And you'll say, you know, 12 is like an interesting thing, how do you get through all the bread? With all the Chassidim, it's not a problem. But the reality is 12, because it's the Lechem Apanim. There were 12 loaves which were on this particular contraption, the Shulchan. It wasn't just a table, but it was a table with a stand on top of it, which held the loaves of bread. And they were made in a kind of, difficult to describe, like if you take the letter Chet and you turn it upside down, you've got this kind of basin. And it's that sort of shape. And they went into this particular stand, and this is the Lechem HaPanim. There were 12 loaves of bread there. 12, I suppose, is whatever number it represents. I don't know, there's probably a lot of stuff about that, which I don't really know, but there's a whole sort of interesting thing here. This is not the point I wanted to stop on, but just to mention, by the by. Posachet, Vesham, and now, here comes an interesting sidebar, but it's so important. Vesham, Ish, Mi'avdei, Sha'ul, Bi'amahu. It turned out that one of Sha'ul's servants was there on that day, in Nob, Netzalif Nei Hashem. The rabbi said, what does that mean? So you'll see, again, all the different commentaries. Rashi says here, Netzalif Nei Hashem, Atzar Atzmo Lifnei Ol Moed, Lasok Batorah. He went on what they call in Israel today, Ishtamut. Ishtamut is like a break to go and study. All right, you know, I met a number of groups that regularly do Hishtalmiyot. They go to different places to learn, especially during Shemitah year. A lot of the people who live in Kibbutz Dati, they take a lot of time out and they have a year's program of learning. It's really quite exciting. You know, this is something which is part of the life in Israel for sure. And Doeg was going to study. He was in the town of Nob, and presumably the Kohen was giving some sort of series of shiurim which he wanted to hear. He's the head of the Sanhedrin, he needs to know the halakha. So he was there. So already we're introduced to this guy, and just look at his name. Ushmo Doeg Adomi, Abir HaRoim Asher L'Sha'ul. He was doeg Edomim, doeg the Edomite. The Edomite, it doesn't mean he's Jewish. Okay, Edomite means Edom was nowadays the place called Saudi Arabia. Okay, but the rabbis say, no, he's Jewish, he lived in Edom. There were Jews living outside Israel who came into Israel at certain times, and they in other words, the diaspora had already started in those early days, and Doeg was one of those guys. So there's a lot of different explanations about Edomi, that maybe he had the middah of Esau, because Adom, remember, that was the color that was associated with murder. There's a famous Gemara which talks about, scary Gemara, which says that if you're born on a certain day of the week, what you should become. So it says if you're born under a certain star sign, what you should become. Gemara in Shabbat. The last page of the Gemara there. And the Gemara says if you're born under the sign of Mars, which is the color red, then you should become something to do with blood. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? So they don't suggest you become a murderer. That's not really a good idea. The Gemara says what you should do, become a shochet. We should become a moel. Okay, you know, sort of interesting suggestions over there. And that's what the Gemara says, if you're born under that particular star sign. So, Edomi can have a number of meanings over here. You know, I leave you to do the research a bit. But we'll talk about it. I've got a page to show you about him, because there's a lot to say. As I said, a very complex character. So, sorry? Or a surgeon or whatever. I don't want to talk about what the Gemara says about surgeons, and that's the Rapu Yerapa is the whole Dafayomi at the moment. The Gemara is talking about that. At least the doctor has permission to be a doctor. That's good. Rapu Yerapa at least allows you to do what you're doing.
It's the reason why it said Adomi. Yeah. Adomi, not Edomi. I said
the Pirush. Adomi, Adom. It's not Edomi. Yeah, there's a lot of play on the word, and therefore, is he really, where's he from, and is it a geographical description, or is it a character description? There's a ton of different things. Yeah, it would have said Edomi. So the suggestion that he was an Edomite, but he's always known as, in English, Doeg the Edomite, right? The based on the translation, but it's not necessarily what it really means. Whatever it is, he's a bona fide Jew, that's for sure. The reason why I say that is because we've mentioned him before. If you think back, I think I mentioned this, that there was a big machlokas after the story of Goliath. What happened was that David had finished off Goliath, as it were, and the king, Shaul, says to Avner, who is this Ben Elam, who is this young boy? And of course, he's not asking who he is. He knows who he is because he's been playing music for ages. But of course, the question, as we explained it at that time, was that he wanted to know who he was in terms of his yichus. Where is he coming from? Is he from a certain family? Is he in line to become the new king of Israel? And at that time, we said that there'd already been in the background doubts about David. And the doubts were created by this guy Doeg. Doeg was the head of the Sanhedrin. And what Doeg did, he had a massive, I suppose, I don't know what you would call it, some sort of meeting of the Sanhedrin, where they were discussing Doeg's credibility to become the king of Israel. And Doeg was of the opinion, absolutely convinced that Doeg was possible. He said that Doeg should not be counted as a Jew, because it says, the Moabite cannot become Jewish. And David is descended from Ruth the Moabite. So the rabbi said to Doeg, they said to him, but Doeg, it's already decided, Shmuel has already decided, that it applies to the men. Ruth is the woman, and the women Moabites can become Jewish. And that was the accepted tradition. Doeg never really swallowed that particular explanation. He wasn't happy with it. We know that Doeg always, and you'll see here, again, he's challenging the authority of David. And Doeg is somebody who's always going to be a thorn in the side of David, certainly through this story, as you'll see. And it comes from this sense of not accepting that David would be the person who would take over the kingship of Israel. David is not, in Doeg's estimation, not the right guy. And he sees it as an impediment which he feels is a spiritual impediment. Now the problem is, now, Doeg, Chazal revealed to us that this, as I said, is a very complex guy. And underneath the surface of this particular guy, he could give all the religious reasons in the world. What is it really about? It's really about his own desire for power. His own desire to rule the situation. Doeg is a guy that basically wants to be in charge. He wants to have a very high position. He doesn't want to see Shaul leave. He wants to be very close. He wants to have that position. And this is a very, as I said, a very complex guy. On the one hand, a great, obviously a great Talmid Chacham, somebody who studied Torah at a very high level, but personally had a lot of what we would call character issues. Let's be very kind. I'm probably going to use the word defects, but you'll see as we go along. So he's thrown into the mix over here. Again, Posachet. There was a man of the servant of Shaul, Netzalif Ne'ashem, going to study. Shmo Doeg Adomi Abir Haroim. And he was the chief of the shepherds. And again, the rabbis say, look at Rashi, Av Bet Din. The chief shepherd means he was in charge of the Bet Din. What that says about the other rabbis in the Bet Din, you know, following like sheep, I'm not quite sure. Hopefully they're a bit more independent than that. But he says, Abir Haroim, Asher LeShaul, who were obviously a part of Shaul's entourage, right? So, he was there, and he knew that David had been there. And now we go back to the story. But it's significant, as I said, because he is the one who's going to spill the beans. When the king wants to know where David is, and he says, none of you are faithful, none of you are loyal to me, you're not telling me where David has gone, Doeg puts up his hand, please sir, I know exactly where David is, where he was, and there's a terrible tragedy, a terrible thing that happens, as you'll see in a few minutes. Pasuk Tet, Vayomer David Lachimela. So David says, Lachimela, in Yeshpo Tachet Yadcha Chanit Ocher. In other words, he basically wants to know, not only do I want food, but I need a sword, something to take with me. Ki gam charbi v'gam keilai lo lakachti biyadika yad devar melech nachutz. He said, I had to go on the order of the king. I had to run away very quickly. I had to run, and I didn't take my weapons with me. So, do you have anything that I can take? Vayom ha-koin. And the koin said, cherev goliat ha-plishti. It so happens that the sword, the very sword that you used to cut off the head of Goliath, It's hanging here. This is like the museum. It's in the Ashe Kita Bemekaela, where you killed Goliath in the valley there. We put it over there behind the ephod. It's sitting in the sort of, I don't know what you would call it, the dressing room over there in the Mishkan. If you want to take it. There's no other weapon we can give you. Come on. Excellent. Excuse me. He said, there's nothing like it. This is it. Tened Ali, give it to me. So it's very odd. There's kind of a real irony here that, you know, he's going to collect the sword in this situation. You'll see what the irony is as we go along. David now has bread and he's got a sword. But where does he go? Very interesting. What you know, where would you go? If you are now how should we say, there's a wanted poster with your face on it in every town in Eretz Israel. Wanted, David, you know, fugitive from the king. Something that the king has decided is a rebel and everything else, and it's all on the wanted poster. Where does he go? The only place he could possibly go where Shaul will not go is to the enemy camp. Now, this is, again, amazing. And look at David. I mean, his I don't know what the word is. His kind of chokhmah is really quite extreme. Vayokav David, Yivrach b'yamim b'nei Shaul. Vayavo, where did he go? El Achish melech Gat. He went to Achish, he went down to Gaza. Okay? Gaza is never far away from our lives. Vayom rav de Achish elav. So the servants of Achish say to the king of the enemy, of the Plishtim, Hello, Zed David. This is David. Right, you know, what are you doing? You know, why are you allowing him in here? Melech Haaretz, and of course that's interesting. They're already calling him king of the land. Okay, we are not yet in a position to suggest that the Jewish world knows that he's king, but they consider him to be the Melech because he's such a great warrior. Hallo lezeh yanu bechalon lemor. We know that they praised him. The women sang. Hikash Shaul balafav David rivotav. Shaul kills thousands. David tens of thousands. So this is the guy you're letting into your camp. You're letting him into Gat? I mean, you know, for goodness sake. But Yosem David at Advarim Ailak Bilavavo. What did David do? He overheard this conversation and he got very worried, as you can imagine. By Yiramod, he was very scared. Because he thought Achish was going to kill him, for obvious reasons. Now, what did he do? So basically, he changed his ta'am. Tam is a difficult word to translate here. It literally means his taste. Tam here means his whole character. He started behaving like a lunatic. He does this on a number of occasions, David. He really does a very good impersonation of a loony. And it's interesting, he does it later on in Shmuel Bet. You'll see another example of it over there. Very, very interesting. He knows how to save his skin. Vayishanu et tamo, posa yudala beinem. But what did he do? He changed his whole style, his character. And he started to behave as if he was crazy. He started, as it were, scribbling on the doors of the gate. In other words, started scratching the walls like a lunatic. And he started dribbling. And that apparently is a sign of madness, right? It worries me because sometimes we do this after dinner. The reality is, hopefully, not in that way. It's one of those things which is very interesting, you know, the whole way that David behaves. And of course, Achish says this famous pasuk, Vayom Achish al Avadav. So Achish, the king of the enemy, says to his servants, Hine, you're worried about this guy, he's crazy. He says, Tiruish Mishtageh, the guy is nuts. Lama Tavioto Eloi, why did you bring him to me? He's complaining that they brought him in, and you know, he's a crazy man. And look at this pasuk, it's a wonderful pasuk. Chasam Meshugoyim Oni, am I lacking Meshugoyim? Am I lacking crazy people? Okay, very very often I believe that the Prime Minister of Israel has been known to use this pasuk in many, many different situations, particularly at cabinet meetings. Chasam Meshugoyim Oni, am I missing, you know, am I lacking crazy people here? Ki Evetim Etzer, like that you brought another Meshuggah here to be crazy. This is you want to bring it to my house. So basically at that point, at that point David seems to be safe. He certainly has saved his life that Achish is not going to touch him. All right, but of course he can't stay there because Achish has basically thrown him out. He's basically said, I don't need another crazy man in the camp. It's interesting, you'll see later on in the chapter, where it is, 26, 27, that he runs away to Achish again. Okay, so I think it happens again later on. It's an interesting thing, that he always felt he could run to the enemy and be safe. Okay, it's one of those interesting concepts, which of course nowadays is just not going to happen. But in those days, maybe there is a thought here. David was a very smart guy. We'll go a bit further, because we're doing a lot of psukim this evening. In fact, what I'll do, we'll get through the material, and we'll do the analysis of Doeg, please God, next time. Because there's a lot to say about Doeg. As I said, very interesting person. Vayelech David Misham, chapter 22. So David goes away. Vayimaleit Amarat Adulam, he goes to the cave of Adulam. Vayishmu Echav Echol Beit Aviv, Yodeh Elav Shama. And then his whole family joins him there. Okay? Because they're all basically fugitives at this point, and they need to run away. Vayit Kapsu Elav Kolish Matzok. And then David becomes a magnet for all the misanthropes, all the guys who basically are upset, you know, that want to have arguments with the king or arguments with the tax people, and you know, the whole group. And basically he becomes a kind of focus for them. Anyone who was in trouble, in distress, anyone who owed money, all right, you know, you don't go to jail these days. In those days, you would go and find somebody to become a bandit, as it were. The cholishmar nefesh, anyone who had a bit of soul, who knows what that means? You know, nowadays, unfortunately, they put them on park benches. But in those days, they found the leader. Vayhi aleihem lasar, and he became their captain. Vayyui mo karbam yot ish, and eventually he came to 400 men. So now David has got this massive problem, not only in terms of being chased by the king, but he's got 400 men, which he feels responsible. He's got to feed them. So again, where's he going to get the food from? As you'll see later on, it becomes an issue in chapter 25. We'll see this come up again. But in the meantime, let's see what happens in Nob. So he goes to a place called Mitzpeh Moab. Must have been on the border looking over Jordan, which is Moab in those days. And he says, and he thought because his Bobby was from Moab, Ruth, that he could trust the king of Moab. It's very interesting. So he says to the king, that he asked his parents to go and be with Moab to get out of the firing line, because he thought if his life was in danger from Shaul, maybe his parents are in danger as well. So he sent them off to Moab, and hopefully this was the cousin, the feta in Moab, right? And then he would be there. And he says, what will happen? What will God will do? In other words, wait till, let's see, at least they'll be in a safe place. And of course, what happened was the king of Moab, unfortunately, did not honor his side of the bargain. that there's no surprises in this world. Nothing has changed. Vayinachem et pnei melech Moab. So you see, vayanchem et pnei melech Moab. He brought them to the king of Moab. Vayeshu imo kol yimeiyot David and Suda. And they were with him the whole time that David was in the stronghold, presumably meaning Nob. They and wherever David was running around at that time, his parents were safe. Now, vayomer Gad hanavi el David. God had already said, God the prophet had said to David, lo teshev im Suda. Lech uvata lecha eretz Yehuda. Don't stay in this place, Metzuda, where you were saved. Go to the land of Yehuda. Ve'yelech David ve'yavo yacharet. And he came to a certain place called the forest of Charet. Fine. Ve'yishma Shaul. Now, at this point, and Chazal points out that the king of Moab did not honor his bargain, David's whole family was killed out. And I don't even know if we're told this in the pasuk. I don't think it says so here, but it's certainly told in the midrash that the king of Moab did not honor his obligation, family obligation, you want to call it that. And later on, we'll see that David, one of the nations that he takes particular revenge against, is Moab. So it's kind of a sort of an interesting piece of information within that. Yishai did not survive this particular event, which is a bit of a shock. In the meantime, back to Shaul. Let's see what he's doing. Vayishma Shaul ki nadat David v'anashim ha'sheito. So Shaul had heard. David had been, as it were, known. He'd been spotted. V'Shaul yoshev b'giva tachad ha'esha b'ramah. And Shaul was sitting there in his place in Ramah. V'chanito b'yado, he's always got his spear ready to throw at somebody. V'chol avadav nitzavim alav, all the servants are standing there. V'yomer Shaul avadav. Here's such an incredible pasuk. He says to his servants, nitzavim alav, who were standing. They must have been trembling before the king. Shimuna b'nei yimini, your Benjamin is. The Avadim were from the same tribe. Obviously, he got his landsmen together, and he had all the people together. You sons of Benjamin, gam lekulachem yitain ben Yishai sadod kramim. I don't trust any of you. Maybe Ben Yishai. And of course, when he calls him Ben Yishai, he's referring to David in the negative sense. He always sees him as an enemy, and you'll see that that's when he calls him Ben Yishai. He says Ben Yishai might have bribed you. He might have given you fields. He might have given you kramim, given you vineyards or whatever. Lekulachem yasim sarei alafim sarei mad. He might have given you some sort of sort of privileged position, make you captains of the army, whatever it may be. Ki kasharatem kulachem alai. Now you're all banding up against me. Ve'en golet azni bichrat beni mi Ben Yishai. Nobody's told me where my son Yonatan made the covenant with Ben Yishai. Ve'en cholem mikem alai. And nobody is, any of you is feeling towards me. Cholem literally means sick. But none of you are feeling bad for me. For golet osni and telling me where David is. Ki ekim b'ni et avdi olai lo'orev. And it turns out that it's almost as if my son has incited my enemy, my servants to be some sort of trap for me. In other words, he's basically saying to them, I don't trust any of you. None of you are telling me the truth. Now, here comes Doeg, and this is the point I wanted to get to. Vayan Doeg Edomi, who nitzav al Avdei Shaul. Doeg was one of the servants, and he's standing there with the Avdei Shaul, he's hanging out with those guys. Vayomar, and he says, and Yomar is always like a statement, a really outlandish statement. Ra'iti et Ben Yishai, I saw Ben Yishai, I saw David. Ba Noveh el Achimelech ben Achitub. I know that he went to Achimelech, and he was in Nov. Now who reveals it? Doeg. Nobody else says a word. And at this point in time, the king makes a decision which we know is going to be so drastic, it's so shocking, that because they harbored an enemy of the state, not only is David liable for death, but if you harbor the enemy, you're also liable to be punished. And Shaul makes a decision that the people of Nov have to be punished. It's the most scary thing. Vayishal lo bashem, and not only that, And this piece of information is significant as well, that there was a request made of God through the Urim V'Tumim that David behave like the king, because the rule was that the Urim V'Tumim were used by the Kohen Gadol to communicate with God, this special breastplate, which had the name of Hashem tucked into it. And at that point in time, not only was that being used by the Kohen Gadol, but it was being used by David, which was a privilege of the king. The king was allowed also to use the Urim V'Tumim to ask Hashem what to do in a case of war or whatever. And David had used the Urim V'Tumim through the offices of Achimelech. And at this point in time, of course, that was something that the king, Shaul, realized was a no-no. As far as he was concerned, it should not have been done. And not only that, But Seder Natan Lo, we know that he gave him provisions as well, gave him food. But Cherev Goliath Plishti Natan Lo, he gave him the sword of Goliath. Everything was, as it were, crime after crime in order to make the guilt of the Kohanim even worse. Vayishlach HaMelech, he doesn't even say his name here because he's acting as the king. The king sends Likro et Achimelech ben Achituv. He wants to bring Achimelech to him to answer the charges. HaKohen, at Kol Beit Aviv HaKohanim, he's bringing all the priests, Asher Banov, Yavol Kolom HaMelech, they all come to the king. And it turns out there's 85 priests with him. A whole delegation, and they're probably wearing the big day, whatever they wore, the special clothing that they wore. We read it last Shabbos, the whole thing, what was made, the ephod, and the, you know, all the stuff that they had to wear. And they're standing in front of the king, and this is the most tragic, probably one of the most tragic stories in Jewish history. Vayomer Shaul Shmana ben Achitub. He's in trouble. He's not calling him by his first name. Son of Achitub, listen. Vayomer Hineni Adoni. Here I am. He doesn't realize he's in danger. Vayomer Elav Shaul, Lama Kesharteh Balai. The same language. Why have you banded up? Atav ben Yishai betitcha lo lechem v'cherev. You gave David the bread and you gave him the sword. V'sha'olo belokim. And you asked of the Urim V'tumim. You asked a question of God. Lo kum elai lo rev kayom hazeh. You're being a trap for me. In other words, you're not being faithful to me. Vayan Achimelech et HaMelech v'yomar Achimelech answers. He says, "Mi b'cholav adav k'David ne'eman." I didn't think David was anything more than a faithful servant of the king. Why should I suspect him? V'chatana melech. Not only that, he's your aider, he's your son-in-law. So you know, you may not get on with the father, but you know, to that point, I didn't dream. V'sar mishmatecho v'nichban. He's honored. He seems to be very listening to your requests, your commands. B'beitecha, in your house, hayom achiloti l'sholo b'elokim. I asked of God, chalilali. Right? He says, you know, in other words, is it the first time that I've done such a thing to ask of Hashem? God forbid, no. Al yasem ha-melech b'avdo davar b'chol beit avi. Don't hold this against my father's house. In any way, ki lo yodav decha b'chol zot. This is not something which I knew about, davar katan o gadol, whether it's small or big. In other words, he's basically saying that this is something you should not hold against me. It's unacceptable to say that this is, for your estimation, something which is bad. I'm just going to finish.
Right?
He doesn't mention that. It's there's a lot of implication over here, as opposed to, but he probably feels he's said enough to cover the base. But of course, the king's reaction is unbelievable. No discussion. The king is king. He makes the decision. That's it. And as I said, it's one of the most difficult stories in Tanakh. Vayomer HaMelech, again, not Melech Shaul, the king. Mot Tamut Achimelech Ata V'chol Beit Avicha. You are all condemned to die. Very shocking. And the famous story, he asked all of his servants, go and carry out the death penalty straight away. There's not even a waiting time. Because they're all with David. They know about it. They didn't tell me. And they didn't want to do it. And of course, just to finish it off, who does he speak to in the end? Vayomer HaMelech L'Doyeg. Look at that spelling. Doyeg from the Lashon Dag. Dag is meaning someone who is a fisherman. He's caught in his own net. So interesting. Doyeg means that his name caught him out. Because what happened to Doeg is that he's the one who now carries out the death sentence. He brought the whole thing about because he spilled the beans. And now he's the guy who has to go and carry out the thing, carry out this terrible death sentence because nobody else is going to do it. Vayomer HaMelech Doeg, Sov ata pega b'kohanim, you go and do it. Vayisov Doeg Adomi, and he goes and does it. And again, Adomi, Vayifgahu b'kohanim, Vayomer b'yomahu shmonim v'chamisha ish. 85 men were killed, no say ephod bad, who were wearing the ephod. They went back to Nov and they destroyed the city, because the city was given the status of an Irni Dachan, like a city which served idols. Everything was destroyed. And Eviatar was the only one who escaped. He went to David and he told David what it was all about. And just to show you just the pasuk right at the end over here, pasuk chaf bet, he says, I know Doeg was there. I knew he was tell Shaul. And therefore, I am responsible. David is such a tzaddik. He can't come to terms now with the fact that it was Doeg who brought it all about. David immediately blames himself. And of course, this again fits in very much with David's sense of responsibility, achrayut. This is a very exceptional man. And David, again, we'll see how the story works out, because this is not the end of this particular parasha. And of course, what happens is Eviatar, who escaped, the only Kohen who managed to escape alive, is now going to live with David, and David says, I'm going to look after you, and he stays with David. We'll read about him when we get to Malachim Aleph. He appears again, Eviatar, later on. This is such a sad story, such a tragedy for Am Yisrael. And what we need to do, and Bezrat Hashem next week, we'll look at a bit of Doeg and try and find out a bit more what is going on inside this guy's brain. What is this man all about? On the one hand, a great learned individual, but on the other hand, somebody's prepared to go and carry out the death sentence on that basis. It blows the mind. As I said, the characters in the Novi, never a dull moment, never a dull moment in any of this stuff. To be continued, Bezrat Hashem, next Monday. Thank you, everybody.